Anânima sua!
Hey!
Hey!
Oh, is there a door? Oh, no. It says it's a forbidden door. Should we open the... No, better not.
Don't do
See
it.
You next
Close
week.
It. Don't open the forbidden door. That's the last thing. Sorry, you, it's a lovely house, but it does have a forbidden door in it. Well, can we get it like boarded up or bricked up or something? No, it can never be bricked up.
I mean, okay, but if we open it, what's inside? Oh, it's just excellent wrestling. Hmm.
It's just...
Okay. Don't know why it's so forbidden. I mean, what you want to do is you want to get like an AV kit down there and just, you know, start recording it. You could actually probably sell that. You could monetize it. A good little earner on your house. There's also a murderous cellar. Not as good.
A lot of asbestos. So,
yeah, it's just asbestos. It's called murderous cellar. Forbidden it's just door. Asbestos.
It opens forbidden doors in your lungs. Cancer comes out.
And forbidden doors that you can't go in unless you've got quite serious cancer, like radiology and immunology sort of things. Oh, what a bleak way to start what has been otherwise
Never mind.
Enjoyable show. So we had a watch of AEW and New Japan's Forbidden Door. I'm going to start off, Pete. I'm going to take a little bit of umbrage on this. This is very much has been, you know, it's sort of AEW versus New Japan. Traditionally in comics, when they start off, DC and Marvel would occasionally come together to do Spider-Man versus Superman, or right. You know, you get Batman versus Spawn, or whatever it would be. Comic creators would come together. The first one would always be versus, and the second one would always be teaming ups, because they were a bit like, well, we've done the fight between the two of them, neither of them could win, so now let's team them up and they can take on like combined bad guys. This was arse about tit, because this was all having loads of people teaming up instead of giving me the big one-on-one dream matches that I was dreaming of, Pete. What could have been? This was very much, to me, an AEW pay-per-view that happened to be using lots and lots of New Japan talent.
Yes.
I thought it was a classic example where one group is in charge and they sit down with the other guys and they go, okay, well, let's talk about who's going to win and who's not going to win. My feeling is all our guys go over, apart from when it's your champion and you can't win the belt. How do you feel about that? And they sort of went, thought it would be much more respectful, this meeting. Look, it was great. The in-ring was brilliant. The booking for me left a little bit to be desired. That's the only thing.
It was kind of like, it was a lot of fun. I do worry, you've got to be worried. If you are the head of New Japan, whoever Tony Khan is in Japan, you've got to be a bit worried that Tony Khan's found a little loophole and he's signed up all of your wrestlers and he's going to keep them for the first 150-man roster in wrestling history.
The funny thing about it is all of the New Japan stars afterwards are like, I enjoyed it so much. And all of the talent that was injured from New Japan. So Hiromu Takahashi did a tweet that just said, I wish I was there so much. And it's just, you must be sitting there if you own New Japan just going, a millionaire has literally come along. He's taken them all on holiday. And all the ones who didn't go on holiday are now sitting there going, I wish I was there. It's really fun. Oh, it's really great. And at home, New Japan is ice cold at the minute. I mean, it really is.
They're
still yet to bring back cheering or booing crowds, so they've got crowds but they are not allowed to make any noise.
I think the first ones are starting. You're allowed to throw toilet paper and shout this week, I think, and batteries,
bits of crab shell, forbidden doors. These doors actually are forbidden, so please don't throw them in the ring.
The only thing that's forbidden is fucking shouting. Yes. In New Japan, they've probably not seen an atmosphere like it for ages.
They haven't. They've had 3 years of just silence, and they've also had 3 years of not being able to wrestle the gaijin performers because travel into Japan has been really, really clamped down on. So they have just been stuck in holding patterns, wrestling one another in front of silent crowds. It is slightly a vision of hell. And then suddenly they're in America and everyone's like, there's Coke on tap and Coca-Cola. There's, you know, hamburgers everywhere. And you're just going, well, this is the dream. This is absolutely the dream. They had a lot of bad luck going into this show. So they had a lot of injuries, which did clamp down on the number of sort of dream matches that you could have had. So CM Punk was out And I think obviously a CM Punk Hiroshi Tanahashi main event would have been something really special. And they also had Daniel Bryanson. What's his name? Bryan Danielson. He pulled out of his match with Zack Sabre Jr. because of injury as well. And that for me, I was looking forward to that match so much. The only two winners of the Wrestling Observer's Technical Wrestler of the Year award for the last 17 years have been Daniel Bryanson. Oh, I never get it right. And Zack Sabre Jr. Leading wrestling podcast. I can't say podcast, and I don't even know the name of the man who used to be Daniel Bryan. I can still do Daniel Bryan.
Junior Sabre Jr. Mate, you got that right. Jesus Christ.
There was also some things like Tetsuya Naito, who didn't perform sort of for no reason. You had Hiromi Takahashi, who did the tweet about really wanting to be there. He was injured as well, so you had lots of people falling out. But they did this thing about all the multi-man matches. Now, I should say, I thought that every single one of the matches was really, really enjoyable. I absolutely loved them. I found myself just being a real baby and sitting there going, if only they could have tweaked it to make it more special. I think with the multi-man matches, there's a sense of them saying, you're testing the water. You're not going to put, you know, one of your stars in against a New Japan star and have everyone go, who's this guy? So you've mixed everyone together. They blend in a bit, and I can understand why that's done. You know, you're worried that the fans won't know who El Fantasmo is, and they'll start going, "Who are you? Who are you?" I mean, that was not ever going to be the case. This show sold out in seconds. The people who wanted to see this match knew who the Japanese stars were. AEW fans love wrestling. They like all wrestling. This was very much something that, you know, I think we could have had a couple of dream matches. There were. I mean, with the exception of the main event, your John Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, I think, you know, everything was pretty much a multi-man match, and that took away from the specialness for me. And I should say, I'm being a baby, because all of those multi-man matches were good. That opening match with Eddie Kingston in on one side and Minoru Suzuki on the other was so much fun. God, I would have liked to have seen Minoru Suzuki versus Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw him pile driver him, I seem to recall, didn't you? Big move that I just did not expect a man of his age to be able to lift a man of his heft
with his gotch pile driver. I mean I look at Eddie Kingston and Minoru Suzuki, and it's a perfect example. I do not know why they are two of the greatest professional wrestlers in the world, but the moment they get in that ring, I mean, within 2 seconds of just moving in that ring, you go, oh, these guys are head and shoulders above most other people. They were just phenomenal. I mean, it was just that opening match. Jericho, I know we've had a laugh about Jericho being what we like to refer to as a shitbag. He looks like a sack of shit quite often. He's looks like he stinks. He's pathetic and sad and tragic. He is having an amazing year, and it seems to be, as he gets older, rather than becoming worse and more annoying, he's becoming better and far more enjoyable. I had nothing but good news about this first match. But what it did do is it set a precedent, which was you had 6 men in the match, 4 from AEW and 2 from New Japan. And the decision was made that the New Japan wrestler, one of them, should be pinned by an AEW star. And I looked at this and I thought, well, normally they do that because they're building up for the main event, which will be the New Japan star going over the AEW star. So what you do is you sort of go, we'll have a lot of little victories, and then you get the big one. Instead, what happened was New Japan stars were pinned by AEW stars 5 times. AEW stars were pinned by New Japan stars 2 times, both of those in title matches for IWGP belts, that therefore they couldn't allow the Americans to win, the AEW stars. And there was one match where a New Japan star was pinned by a New Japan star in a match where they could have pinned an AEW star, but they decided, no, let's have the New Japan guy do the job. So as I began watching that, I was a little bit like, I'm feeling like this is not what I wanted it to be, which was stage one of going, we are now going to have 3 years where this will just be a constant thing, and it'll be New Japan versus, and it will build and build and build and build. It made me feel like this felt a bit like, oh, we're going to have a bit of fun. It's going to be a one and done, and we won't really build anything out of this match. You know, or the card with Japan. The only angles that were built were between Japanese stars, or Will Ospreay and Katsuyori Shibata, who came out at the end of his match with Orange Cassidy. It was AEW stars, so Eddie Kingston pointing at Cesaro. So the one thing I have is about dream matches. And dream matches, for me, always are going to have to be one-on-one. And I don't think that's, like, you know, That's especially the case when it comes to Japan. They do have a lot of multi-man matches. They do have a lot of tag team matches. But there's something about like singles matches, which are the culmination of dream matches. They only had a couple, three singles matches on this pay-per-view. And two of them I have a great deal of issues with. It's so spoiled. Such a spoiled baby. Will Ospreay took on Orange Cassidy, and Zack Sabre Jr. took on the returning Pete, Claudio Castagnoli, the former Cesaro.
Yay.
What a big pop.
What a big pop. And it was the biggest pop of the night. And he's put on a bit of muscle, hasn't he? I don't know what he's been up to. I know he's been up to. He's lifting plates, for crying out loud. But he's such a clean fucking wrestler.
Oh,
and I love
isn't
his,
he?
Big, I love his big punches. He's
amazing to watch. And there's also that thing of, you know, when you see a wrestler as well who's been suddenly freed from the WWE system where they've been held back, where they've been frustrated, you just hit the ground running. And he seemed unstoppable. And that's one of the big problems I had with the choice of opponent for Zack Sabre Jr. With Zack Sabre Jr. and Cesaro, I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. had the dream match with Bryan Danielson, aborted because of Danielson's injury. So it was kind of well known that Cesaro would probably take his place. But the problem was, it stopped being the story of New Japan versus AEW or Danielson versus Sabre Jr., which are both big wrestling stories. And it became the return of Claudio Castagnoli.
Another WWE story, isn't it, really?
Well, it was what it was a debut story, and it completely made Zack Sabre Jr. slightly redundant. You knew Cesaro was not going to lose in his debut match. The idea that Zack Sabre Jr. is going to manage to tap him out. Zack Sabre Jr. looked great in this match. It was a brilliant match. Under any other circumstances, you'd want to see that match all day long. I just felt that what it did by having Zack Sabre Jr. take the pinfall, which of course he had to do, it really robbed me of going, oh, I wanted to see them come in to face Danielson and Sabre clean, where both of them were saying, I'm the best in the world. And now you've got that thing of going, yeah, you're the best in the world. My mate beat you, didn't he? Remember when you came in last time? And my mate really out-wrestled you over 25 minutes. And then you lost. Remember that? So I just felt that to me was a perfect example of the fact that this is very much an AEW show where they have decided that the debut of their new star is much bigger than any longer term storylines or any, if you like, you know, hardcore fan dream scenarios. They're business people. That's what they do. It was a great moment. As he came out, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Because I will watch Zack Sabre Jr. all day long. The guy is just phenomenal in the ring. And to see him, if you like, play second fiddle to a pro wrestling storyline rather than it be something in the ring, I was really like, oh, that's a real... They buggered that up. The other singles match... And they buggered it up on one level. What they attempted and wanted to do, which was push Claudio to the moon, they did perfectly. It's just that wasn't the storyline Daddy wanted to see.
Too many stories. Like the absolutely huge lineup, the huge roster of wrestlers that AEW certainly has. I mean, like they've just got a lot of storylines as well they could play, but they don't.
I know. The other booking that I thought was really annoying was the fact that they had Will Ospreay take on Orange Cassidy. Now, Orange Cassidy is a great wrestler. He's not, I wouldn't class him as a comedy wrestler, but what he is he's a very stylized wrestler who has his own set of mannerisms that people want to see him do. Now, those mannerisms are not necessarily serious within the context of a wrestling show. Will Ospreay is regarded as being one of the best wrestlers of the last 5 years. He has had more five-star main events and undercard matches than anybody else in history. He's relatively young. He is a huge, huge, big-time performer. And what they did here was they brought him in, taking on a mid-card talent, and that mid-card talent gave him everything that Will Ospreay could handle. I would have said it would have been a better idea to have Will Ospreay against more of an AEW main eventer, because then you're setting him up as being on that level. The match was really good. It became incredible. The first section for me was a little bit, what it is Orange Cassidy's strengths, which are doing the gimmick stuff, really didn't play to Will Ospreay's strength, because the worst thing that Will Ospreay does in wrestling is he has got a C in GCSE drama. And he will pull faces that if you saw in a production of the Pied Piper of Hamelin done by 13-year-olds, you'd go, oh, that kid's shit. He overdoes it and he mugs. And so in the middle of the comedy, he'll sort of go, put on a face like, oh, Hulk, very angry. Or he'll do one going, I can't believe you just done that. And it plays to the worst of the bits that he did. That match became sensational, but I did watch the sort of first 12, 13 minutes, and I did think, bollocks, I'd have liked to have seen him against someone who was really like, I'm going to humiliate this guy and have him go, I am going to absolutely school you in what it is to be a main eventer. Yeah. That could have been thrilling. Again, I'm wanting to see a different show to the one that AEW wanted to put together. And you can't really criticize people for not doing exactly what you want. There will be people who'll be listening to this and saying, aren't you going to do match by match like you normally do? You know, so in that respect, we are the Tony Khans. And we just go, well, you know, you can't shout at us for not giving you exactly what you wanted.
We'll pick and choose. We'll talk about Sting jumping off that off that platform at 62 years old.
I mean, the guy, he
really wanted that because he wanted that jump, didn't he, in that gymnasium that the Hardys did in the end, that Matt Hardy did in the end. And he just went, I want to show them that I can jump. And it was a very good jump. It was.
And I love the fact that they use Sting in these small ways. They book him better than they book anybody else in AEW. It is a delight to see him coming out. There were some bits I loved, which was Kevin Kelly, who's the New Japan commentator. He was on this. I could tell that Taz and Jim Ross were slightly getting the hump with him at various points.
They
were a bit like, oh, you big stupid mark. They didn't appreciate all of his stuff going on about your Japanese, you fucking weebo. the neckbeard. And there was a bit where Kevin Kelly just sort of went, Sting has a long history of working in New Japan. And then there was silence. And I was thinking to myself, he does. But the one we're all thinking is, do you remember, that match that ended Rick Rude's career? And you're like, oh, can't mention that one. No good. But I mean, they use him so well. And that was a perfect example of one of the AEW stars who I thought came across best on the show was in that match with Sting, and that was Shingo Takagi, who is a main event star. And having him with Sting, it made Shingo Takagi seem like a bigger star. I am sure those photos are going to be all over, you know, Tokyo Sports and Weekly World Pro, whichever of the Japanese weekly wrestling magazines are still going. That picture of Sting and Takagi, you know, giving each other, that is the beauty of Sting. He is a legitimate star from the 80s and the 90s who is still going and seems much bigger now than he did at the end of the 90s. I mean, just great booking. Really, really wonderful. I'll give them that. That isn't badly booked.
They can have that. I enjoyed the State Farm advert that kept on appearing during Malachi Black for some fucking reason.
That was a sort of good example there where they had the new belt that everyone was competing for, which I think is called it's the All Something. I was about to say All Access, but it's not that. They haven't announced it as such, but it's basically a foreigner's belt. So Pac is from Newcastle, Miro from Bulgaria. You had Aleister Black, who is Dutch, and you had Clark Connors, who was filling in for the injured Tomohiro Ishii. So they were supposed to be all foreign, and I believe the whole tournament was full of foreign people. I don't like having a belt for the foreigners. Because what it says is we've given them their own belt because they're not going to be able to get on the American one. I don't like that at all. Who did you see in this that you went, oh, they're good? Is there anyone that you'd not really come across before and you were like, that dude I could get into?
Well, it was more kind of getting into the people. It was more getting into the people who sort of like rocked up, like Shibata. Is it Shibata when he comes out with against Ospreay? So, like the pop for that, because I just don't assume that. I just assume that no one's as clever about wrestling as you are, Mark. So you're the only person who gets excited. So to be honest, I thought I really enjoyed the three-way FTR. United Empire and Roppongi for some fucking reason. And Dax just fucked off.
Yes. Yeah.
And then came back all taped up and stuff.
Yeah.
I
thought, you know, they are probably FTR, the single most reliable big act going at the minute. Everything they do is brilliant. I would say there is no reason for that to have been a triple match. I mean,
you could have
just had that against the IWGP champions, considering they would lose the belts anyway to FTR. So it just felt to me like, well, why did we have those other guys in? That just diluted it down. Give me a tag team classic. Yeah. You know FTR can bring a tag team classic. Don't do anything to handicap them. Just put them in there in a two-on-two and just have magic. I did love this. I did love this. The only reason I'm being narky about it is because I was going, I'd have done this. And I just wanted, do you know what I wanted, Pete? I wanted the matches that didn't happen. I wanted CM Punk versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, you know, who is the sort of, he is, if you like, the easiest way to describe him is New Japan's John Cena. He is, he is the man who took New Japan when it was really, really poor, and he made it into a huge concern. People love him. He is also he's 45.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? He's older than us. Like, it's incredible. And that kind of, and again, I didn't know that would be about. Have I seen him before? I will have seen him in at some show, wouldn't
you
I?
Must have. I think we've done one Wrestle Kingdom, and I think you will have seen him in the main event.
I'm fairly certain I saw him before, but I remember the fact that on his Wikipedia, and I went back and doubled up on that. It said when he debuted, he was seen as an innovator because he said "I love you" to his fans after the match and played an air guitar.
That's
something very unusual in New Japan Rising, and it just makes me laugh. And that's all it took to sort of say "I love you" and then play the air guitar.
It's true. The air guitar. He did a little bit of that, and then he throws it out to the crowd, and I still do watch that, and I still go, kind of hate that. I think it's
I love it. I'm rubbish. And so, but Moxley's kind of the CM Punk replacement, I suppose, in this kind of situation.
Because
obviously CM Punk's injured, and he was never gonna be here. But there's something about Moxley that he's just too brutal.
I agree.
And it would have been a more convincing Blade job if he'd ran backstage like Dax did and come back with his head broken off. Because Jim Ross at one point says, when did that happen? I didn't see him get busted open. Yeah. I don't know when that happened. When he rolled really slowly out of the ring and then the camera like stayed in for way too long when he was clearly blading his head. It's like, fucking hell, lads.
Jim,
get it together.
Don't start doing a big thing about when did that happen, because then people will go, I'll have a look back and see if we can spot
there.
It. Oh, is it? You know when it happened, Jim, and you know the cameras are off it. So don't be surprised. They brought Jim Ross out halfway through the show, and I did sort of think they were just basically going, let him be around a lot of people from Japan for as long as possible before we put him on the air, so it isn't like a novelty for him when he's constantly going to come out and sort of say, you know, from the land of the rising sun, you know, guy eats a lot of noodles. And it was just that thing of going, just bed in a bit. All right, bed in, we'll bring you in halfway. I do think the Moxley in the main event that could have worked would have been Moxley versus Okada. Okada is bigger and broader than Tanahashi. Yeah. He is also, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, Tanahashi was the undisputed greatest wrestler in the world. That was 10 years ago. Tanahashi is still at an incredibly high level, but Okada has eclipsed him as the best wrestler in the world. To stick Okada in a four-man match, it just seemed to me squandering. You know, you could have ended this, I think, with Okada versus Moxley for that interim title. But the reason is, of course, New Japan would have said, we don't want Okada being beaten. And then, you know, AEW would be like, well, we're not going to have a foreign bloke. You know, we've got a foreign title. If he wants to do that, he can have a match with Miro.
Not in Illinois.
No.
Not having this.
What it felt to me was, I did have that feeling that this was a joint pay-per-view. And as I was watching it, I realized it wasn't. It was an AEW one. So by the end, I was like, there is no way that they are going to let Tanahashi end this pay-per-view with that belt. So it came to pass. They also very quickly moved on by having, you know, Jericho come out and then the Blackpool Combat Club to remind you the important thing that comes out of this is not anything to do with New Japan. The important thing is the AEW storylines. Well, I mean, there's a part of me that sort of says, well, what have we just done for the last 3 hours then? What was the point? That forbidden door opens, you just go, yeah, none of it matters. We'll shut it again. You know, and that to me was a little bit disappointing. What it did, of course, is it's set up because Punk's injured. He's keeping the belt, but they've set up the interim AEW title, which is very much like what they do in MMA, where when the champion recovers, they will then have a unification match for there to be one champion. Well, I mean, I would say in the long term, I think there's a better thing hanging over that you've got Punk versus Tanahashi to unify those belts with two people from the other side of the world. It's a big global thing than saying we're building up towards Punk and Moxley. We could have built up to Punk and Moxley in a million different ways at a million different times. We can do it 5 years from now. We can do it 5 months from now. With Tanahashi, yeah. It seemed like this is a key moment. And with them not jumping on it, I slightly feel like this was a one and done. And we aren't going to be seeing this sort of thing again. And that, to me, was, you know, really chilling. I want to see this all the time. But seeing the way it was booked, it makes me think, no, this is just a one-off and it'll be looked on. People will go, oh, maybe Pete, in 6 months' time, people will start catching up with my opinions, Pete. And they will start going, could it have been booked differently? Oh, what could have been?
Mark, no matter what you think, no matter what your opinion is and what job you have finally get in wrestling, if it's on the AEW side, it'll be soundtracked by the band Fozzy. So no matter what you do, Fozzy will be there. So you're going to have to deal with that.
It'd be my first thing. I'd finally get to work for AEW. I'd turn up and they'd go, so we're going to start the show with Fozzy. And I go, do you know what, guys? I'm dumb.
Mark, you haven't. The only idea you've had is like literally everyone just wears weird school shoes, like Mino Suzuki.
Yeah, and of course, don't forget, like the Forbidden Door, we had the Abdullah Door, where everybody is dressed as Abdullah the Butcher for matches, and they're just denoted by numbers or letters. Abdullah A versus Abdullah 4. That's all it is. At the end, there's a battle royal. The last Abdullah in the ring gets to take off his costume, and underneath, he's dressed as Stan Hansen. It ends.
My God, Mark, Billy, two things. Billy Gunn, fuck me. Mm. How is he so, like, I know he saw him a little while ago, but fuck me. Like, I don't think I really got how, like, what steroids did he take? Because he's had the good ones and the bad, like, you know.
Do you know what? I don't think he takes steroids. I think he takes stepladders. And I think he just eats them. And overnight, he'll just sort of like sprout up a bit more. He's a monster of a man. When you look at him, because this is a big thing about how tall is Billy Gunn, you know, it's a sort of like a running thing. Just going, he's the biggest man you've ever seen. He's like 6'5". When you see him in his heyday, you realize he spent a lot of his time crouching to make everyone else look normal size. And it's just,
they
made him King of the Ring. Why didn't they just have him stand up straight? Everyone would have gone, God, that's great booking. The man's a monster.
Maybe one day Adam Cole will stand up and Booker T will be like, oh my God, he's got loads of muscles. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he didn't have a good one. He injured himself as well. And they had a sort of a very, very quick end. That to me as a wrestler would be like a nightmare that you go, I'm in an IWGP title match on a pay-per-view and I have to end it because I've done my back in. You know, that would be really humiliating and awful. I feel for him about that.
Especially because last week everyone's gone on about the lack of his muscular physique.
I know. And that is a thing. It is impossible, though, not to, when you've heard that, look at him and just go, God, yeah, he's got like a boy's body. You know,
you're right. It's very unfortunate. But
if I did it, I'd look like a sack of shit. But at least it would be something where you go, you don't see that very often. With him, I was just like, that's all boys at the swimming pool. I didn't go to the swimming pool to look at them. Make that clear.
Why did you come out wearing Thunder Rosa's clothes? I don't know.
I thought she was great, by the way. I liked, that was the thing of suddenly in the middle of this Forbidden Door, having an AEW women's match. Of course, you want women represented there. New Japan doesn't have any female performers. They do have a sister organization, Stardom. Apparently, there were problems with booking and visas, and they just couldn't get it sorted. But I did sort of think having an AEW match in the middle of this, I was a bit like, you know, well, that's not a forbidden door, is it? You know, that's
this is a bidden door.
Yeah, this door is bidden, very bidden, too bidden.
This is an accessible entrance, if anything.
Yeah, exactly. This is like a ramp. It's got like a wheelchair ramp to this match
cannot block it. You cannot block the fire door.
No accessible wheelchair matches. That's what I wanted to make clear. I feel warmer to it now we talk about it. And I do think that, you know, the wrestlers worked incredibly hard. The every pay-per-view that AEW put on is just exceptional. And I'm amazed at how it never seems to, you never go, well, that was notably worse than last month. You know,
yeah.
they are always just astonishing, really exciting. Just one quick historical thing, Pete. Obviously AEW are very proud of this connection with New Japan. There had actually been a little bit where a much smaller Forbidden Door was opened, which nobody talks about anymore, which was in 2011, Wrestle Kingdom 5. Saw TNA stars take on the stars of New Japan. Right. And so we got strange matches like Rob Van Dam versus Toru Yano, who was actually in the crowd at Forbidden Door, and Jeff Hardy versus Tetsuya Naito. There was also beer money on the thing. It's been done before, but as you can tell from that, it's never really captured the public imagination. And I do worry that when the pay-per-view numbers come in for this show, I do worry that it's going to be quite low.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then we'll never do it again.
Well, we'll never have to do this recording ever again. But how easy was it to? I tell you what, it's really hard to find a copy of it after the event if you don't want to sign up to Fight TV or whatever the fuck it is.
Really,
I found it very difficult to get hold of people who weren't being insane. Good. God bless Daily Motion. I tell you what, they have dragged us through this. I tell you what,
it's funny how nobody, when people are like, oh, you know, there are all these like torrents and dark websites, no one ever goes, yeah, and Daily Motion, you know, Daily Motion are the absolute worst, or stroke yeah. best. Who can say? But yeah, yeah. Do you want to hear my how I'd have done this?
Yeah, go on then. Yeah. Finish off with how it should have been.
Oh well, I will do, Pete. I will.
All right.
Now I'm not going to put an order on these matches, Pete, because I think you know I don't want to take the fun out of it for everyone. But I would have given Zack Sabre Jr. Wheeler Yuta, who is the youngest member of Blackpool Combat Club. He's a great performer. Right. I think he and Sabre would have matched up brilliantly. And what you would have told is you would have told the story of Wheeler Yuta, this guy with a load of fire. He's trying to prove himself in Blackpool Combat Club. He's going up against the greatest technical wrestler in the world. He would come close, but Zack Sabre Jr. would just be too much for him. Zack Sabre Jr. has then got bragging rights, and we keep alive the Danielson match, which is the one that everybody wants to see. That is very, very simple booking. Wheeler Yuta is made bigger by the fact that, God, didn't he have a lot of heart? Wasn't he great? But Zack Sabre Jr. was just too much. Zack Sabre Jr. spent 6 months going, all right, Danielson, you fucking bollocks. You sent that little boy out there with his tiny fucking nuts. You know, perfect. Great. Wonderful. Yeah. I'll have that. I would have done FTR versus the Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan just as a tag team match. There was no need for that to be a three-way. I would have given Minoru Suzuki and Eddie Kingston a one-on-one. That would have been a dream match for Eddie Kingston. I would have been more than happy for that to just end in a stupid double count out as they brawl their way all over the building. And I would have booked it that after two matches, they came back out like the fight hadn't stopped. And I would have done that throughout the show. I would have had Will Ospreay versus someone who I think as an opening match that you want to go kind of go, here's the dream match. I'd have done Will Ospreay versus Darby Allin. Darby Allin is one of those guys who I think he would really, really work well with Ospreay because he just throws himself around. Ospreay would actually be in the position of being quite bigger than him. I think that is just one of those things where I just think that works, that combination. I'd have had Shingo Takagi versus Pac. They have a long sort of history of matches that they've had over the years, which have been absolutely sensational. I'd have popped that in. That would have been a great way to introduce Shingo Takagi to an AEW audience as being a huge deal. I would have had a dream match of Sting and Tanahashi teaming against the Young Bucks. I think that would have been a fun match that just, you know, I can see the Bucks having a great time. I think the combination of Sting and Tanahashi would have been just delightful and thrilling. And I would have ended with two singles main events. They would have been the IWGP champion Jay White versus Hangman Page. That's playing into the story that Page has just lost the AEW belt. You're trying to go for redemption against someone who obviously is, you know, wily and cagey. I think that plays into a longer term thing for Hangman Page, which is the idea of him falling a long way and needing to redeem himself. You know, it takes a year. You've got the biggest main event in company history. And the main event would have been Moxley versus Okada for the AEW interim title. You know, I'm not going to say Okada should have gone over, but obviously Okada should have gone over for that. And then face the AEW other champion. you know, at a point to be decided. I think CM Punk versus Okada is a bigger match than CM Punk versus John Moxley. The difference is Moxley, they will advertise every week. Okada versus Punk, they could have done that at Wrestle Kingdom. It would have been thrilling. But of course, yeah. AEW wouldn't want to do that. You're giving away your main event. So you can understand from a business point of view, dream wrestling matches cannot happen. So that's what I'd have done. Look, people are going to say, we can all just go, oh, yeah.
I'm seeing, good for you. You've written something down. Well done.
Great. Sorry, no spot for MJF. What?
So would you? So I'm imagining you being in like the big boardroom and sort of explaining the plan and you know, working out how it's all going to go, maybe explain the spots and stuff. And Tony Khan doing that weird hug that he does, that little kind of I've just ejaculated face that he does when he hugs people.
They'd have just got me back, Mark. after saying you don't have to listen to Fozzy when it happens, and then I'd have said all of that. He'd have come over with that little weak smile on his face, and he'd have tried to hug me, and I'm gone again, Tony. I have left AEW now four times today, right? As I say that, Suzuki and Kingston fall through a wall, like, brawling. And actually, this is good. I'm back, guys.
This is the show. Lovely old job.
Yeah, look, so that was Forbidden Door. I should mention, because I forgot to mention it when we did our recording the other week, but I popped to see Pro Wrestling Eve She Won.
Oh, yes.
I mentioned that. And
smashing.
I saw the Hall of Fame induction of 1980s legendary female performer in Joshi, which is the word you that's used for Japanese female wrestling, Chigusa Nagayo. And she is a proper legend. She was amazing. And she did a little speech, very short, but twice in that speech, Pete, she very, very clearly said Nani Mas. And she didn't say Nani Masu. She went Nani Mas. Like, Nani Mas. I began thinking to myself, is this what it's like when you're like a serial killer that hears voices? And I hear Nani Mas everywhere.
Nani Mas all the time.
I did hear it.
Critical Nani Mas.
Critical Nani Mas. That's a great name for my ECW wrestler name. Here he is, Critical Nani Mas. Oh, God, he's carving his head up. Right. I saw also while she was on her thing, I went onto her Twitter, Chigusa Nagaya, and she took loads of photos in the same way that if we go to Japan and we take photographs in the supermarket, kind of going, look at all the horrible stuff that culturally we don't eat, but they do. There was a picture of her loading up a basket in just like a Tesco Metro. I think the Tesco Metro on Great Portland Street. And I did look at that, and I did sort of go, I will never, ever be able to go into that Tesco Express ever again without thinking, Chigusa Nagayo was right here. Isn't that exciting? Isn't that nice?
I love stuff like that. I love, like, really. So I remember it was the guy, Jesus Christ, why can't I remember his name? It's the most famous game designer who ever lived, who made the Metal Gear Solid games. He was in, I think, like a Pizza Express in Soho. And I was he's in Pizza Express in Soho. That's mental.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it?
He was just having pizza.
But if you're like, and I saw Tom Cruise in there, you'd sort of forget that. But if someone says, like for me, Pizza Express Soho, I'll say to someone, oh yeah, a friend of mine saw the guy who did, I won't get it right, I'll go, is it Snake Plissken? He was Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. I'll get it wrong. Is it Metal Gear Solid? I'll remember it forever. I will say to someone at some point, I'll start that story. I'll see Pizza Express in Soho and I'll say, a friend of mine saw, and then I'll go, can't remember the name of the game. And I'll go, Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. And they go, what, the actor Kurt Russell? And I'll go, no, hang on.
Let me work backwards from here.
Do you know
Jet Set Willy?
You know, Nokia had the snake game. Is that
the guy? That part of it?
The guy invented
was
that.
Was he a man?
Yeah.
Was there a man in my phone?
Pete Donaldson saw Ted Nokia in that branch of Pizza Express.
And when he spoke, he went, do, 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 do.
So what did he... No more questions, Maurice.
Fucking Maurice, honestly.
Like this all day long.
well, we weren't planning on doing this, but everyone was fucking yakking on online about how good, you know.
We have opened the Forbidden Door, which is doing a recording over Zoom, which is very much our Forbidden Door because it never sounds very good and we have loads of problems.
It's, It's always based around Mark's internet. And to be fair, though, Mark, halfway through the recording, I discovered that my internet may not have been as good as it possibly could be because I was illegally seeding a torrent of Forbidden Door. a torrent that did not arrive until after we started recording. I mean, that's great, isn't it?
I cannot wait for you to be in court and just go, "Hey, it's called Forbidden Door. Watch it. What do you expect me to do? I opened up a forbidden door in my computer.
I didn't even watch it. I had to watch it on Daily Motion, Governor. I didn't even watch it. My lips are sealed, Governor.
Why aren't Daily Motion in this court? I rest my case. Amazing. So look, that was Forbidden Door. I think we all agree a strong 3 to 4 out of 10. Needlessly controversial. No, it's a great show. It was a great show. I just, when you hear how I booked it, I mean, it's hard not to feel a lot of regret about what you watched.
I'm writing it down for the show title, a strong 3 to 4. It's good.
Good news. Look, thank you so much for supporting us. We really do appreciate it. Should actually say as well, spoiler warning, in this show, we talk about some of the big things. We'll see you next time.
Oh, you must go crying out loud. If you're watching some of this fucking this, you'll know. Good God.
Oh, until next time.
Nanny Mas.
Nanny Masu.
WrestleMe is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.